Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another edition of our Memory Lane podcast here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. And very pleased to be joined today by a legend with the Steelers, not on the field, but off the field. Joe Gordon was the longtime public relations director for the Steelers, saw great players, great memories, Super Bowls, coaches. Joe, really appreciate you taking some time to join us. How are you today, sir?
I'm good, thank you, Corey. It's great to be with you, and thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to these stories, as I'm sure Steelers fans are. But I want to say, we're recording this on Friday, July 1st. Yesterday was a very special day for Joe Gordon. You were in Canton to be honored by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Joe, can you share the story of What you were able to receive with your honor from the Hall of Fame?
New category in the Hall of Fame, in which they were recognizing PR directors, trainers, equipment managers, and assistant coaches. And there were five people in each category, and I was one of the five in the PR section.
What was it like for you? What was the day like? What was it like to receive the honor? And just explain how much that meant to you.
I was not aware of this special category until they called me on March 22nd to inform me. And it was a longtime PR man, Bill Keenis from the Detroit Lions, who made the call. And when he told me about it, I said, "Bill, what are you talking about? I never heard of this." So then he in turn explained to me what it was, what I just told you a few seconds earlier. And I said, "Wow, that is fantastic. I'm just overwhelmed and very, very honored." So the recognition was Wednesday night with a cocktail party at the football stadium that's adjacent to the Hall of Fame, which they have enlarged, and it's really a fantastic facility. In fact, they're having the USFL championship game there on Sunday. But anyhow, we had a cocktail party on Wednesday night, and yesterday a luncheon at noon, which was emceed by Dan Fouts, the great quarterback from the San Diego Chargers. So it was really a special occasion, and there were, I'd say, about 300 people there. It was very hard. It was sold out, and I had, I think, about 25 people from family and friends. So it was just sensational. I cannot describe it in its entirety because it was that great.
That is fantastic. Congratulations to you, sir. That's just wonderful. Tell the folks what your job was, what your role was with the Steelers, and for how long? Because you were with the Black and Gold for a long, long time.
29 years, from 1969 to 1998. And primarily, when I came in, it was media relations, but then it expanded into public relations, fan relations, the customer relations, and marketing. So I got a chance to do a lot of different things, and it was totally enjoyable. It was a dream of a lifetime to work for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Rooney family, who are really, really something special. And they were just the greatest people to work for. They let you do your job. They had enough confidence in your judgment that you would make the right decisions. So it was fantastic. And then, of course, working with Chuck Noll for the 23 years he was there. Chuck Noll came in 1969, and that was the year I started. It was also the year that the Steelers drafted Joe Green.
And you are a Pittsburgh area native. I want to mention this first before we get into your memories. You grew up around Pittsburgh.
I've lived in the city my entire life, with the exception of the 6 months that I was in the 68. But I've lived in the Oakland section, the Squirrel Hill section, and now I've been on Mount Washington for about 50 years.
And for a local product to get hired by the Steelers, and again, folks, do the math, do the timeline, 1969, the Steelers were not good. Then they became great, and Joe was there for all of it. But for a local guy to be hired by, were you a big Steelers fan at that point?
I'm a huge Steelers fan. My brother and I, who was a year younger than I, we would go to the Steelers games at Forbes Field when we were only about 12 or 14 because we lived in Squirrel Hill. It was a short walk from Squirrel Hill to Forbes Field. So, yes, I was a big fan and obviously very frustrated. And then that first season with Chuck in 1969, we won our opening game against the Detroit Lions, then lost the next 13 in the 70 season. So we had a 16-game losing streak before we turned it around.
All right, so what kind of interest was there, Joe? Because Joe is media relations, public relations. It's his job to sell the team, to make sure there's the publicity and the notoriety. How much interest was there, or quite frankly, was there not, in the Pittsburgh Steelers?
There was considerable interest, considering how bad the team had been, never having any winning seasons and losing many more games than they won. But part of the reason for the popularity it did exist, the popularity of football in Western Pennsylvania, particularly at the high school level. So there was a carryover to that. And like I said, for the fact that the team was not very successful, there was a lot of interest and a lot of support.
But once they started becoming successful, getting the draft picks, the Immaculate Reception, the Super Bowls, can you describe how things might have changed with regards to the way, not just Pittsburgh, but the whole country saw the Pittsburgh Steelers in the early 1970s?
Yes, well, the 72 season, which was Franco Harris's rookie year, we turned it around and went from winning six games and losing eight in 1971 to 11-3 in 72 and making the playoffs for the first time ever. Then following that, of course, was the Immaculate Reception, which was the first playoff win in Steeler history.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So what was it like then as more the Steelers caught the attention of the nation? From your perspective, you're there and you're dealing with media folks, you're dealing with public relations. How much did your job get a lot more difficult because you had a lot more requests and things at that point?
No, we became busier, but it became much more fun. And the fact that there was now national attention rather than just local and regional made it even more enjoyable. And like I said, turning around in 72, 11-3, and the community, the Pittsburgh market, Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, people went crazy. I mean, it was just like hard to believe the enthusiasm. If you got to dinner at a local restaurant, no matter, the talk was always about the Steelers. And then, of course, winning the Super Bowl in 74 made it even more exciting and more unbelievable. And it just carried on. And then, of course, the popularity of the Steelers nationally is still exceptional. I think if you watch the games on TV, the announcers always say how well Steeler fans travel. There's always a large contingent of Steeler fans away games, even if it's on the West Coast or Texas, wherever it is, there's Steeler support, Steeler fans.
When you look back on it, Joe, how incredible was it? You said it was amazing to see all the national attention, but just what was that like? What was it like to be reading national newspapers or magazines or TV, and now they're spending all this time talking about the Steelers, which really had not been the case up until that point?
No, it was just at the beginning, it was unexpected. Although Chuck Noll, even though he didn't win in his first 3 years, there was no question that he had the right roadmap by building the team through the draft, starting with Joe Green in 1969, and then the next year, Bradshaw and Mel Blount, people like that. Later on, Swan and Stallworth, Hammond, Lambert, Mike Webster. I mean, you wound up with 10 guys in the Hall of Fame from those teams, plus the coach. So, it was really something very special and just an incredible accomplishment during that period.
Now, Joe, your role with the team, can you describe, did you work closely with the players? Did you work closely with Chuck Noll? What was a day in the life of Joe Gordon during the 70s as a Steelers PR guy?
You always work with the players and the head coach and even some of the assistant coaches, because the Steelers, as a credit to the Rooneys and Chuck Noll, always had a very open organization, and we had a reputation for having the most open dressing room in the NFL. So that helped the media hype, and we got a lot of national attention. Writers from all the major metropolitan areas would come in during the week and would want to interview Chuck or one of the players, and that was my responsibility to coordinate that.
Did you have any favorite stories of experiences with the players from that era? How did you work very closely with Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, Mean Joe?
Sure.
What were some of those encounters like for you, Joe?
Well, my favorite, the player I was closest to for his entire career was Joe Green. We really had a special relationship. And remember, he came the same year I did. So it was coincidental. But Joe was an unbelievable leader. And if I ever had a problem or needed something from internally with the team, I would just go to Joe and say, Joe, we got to do something about this or something about that. And he said, I'll take care of it. And that was the end of it. That's how strong of a leader he was. But my favorite player was Franco. He was an incredible athlete. And, of course, when he came in 72, that's when we started making the playoffs and had not made them before then. As Joe Green used to say, he credited Franco with a lot of our success. He said the Steelers never made the playoffs before Franco, and then we made it 8 straight years. But Franco was my favorite player. I rooted for him when he carried the ball, and to this day I'm still very close to him. In fact, I had lunch with him last Tuesday.
Joe, could you possibly have imagined after the Immaculate Reception? Look, it was a great football play. It was an unbelievable ending. But 50 years later, that's the biggest play in the history of professional football.
Right.
Can you take us back to that day or the feeling after?
As you mentioned, it's the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. It'll be December 23rd. It happened December 23rd, 1972. But when the play unfolded, I was at my station in the press box, and I had a direct line to where Franco caught the ball. But I was not sure whether he caught it in the air or on the bounce, because it was that close to the ground. And, of course, I saw the rest of the play develop, and then there was some question whether it was a legal play, whether Frenchie Fuqua touched it or whether it was Jack Tatum, the safety for the Raiders. Because at that time, two offensive players could not touch the ball in succession. If they did, it would be called an incomplete pass. But if a defensive player hit the ball, and it ricocheted towards Franco, it was legal. So the referee, Fred Schweinberg, he wasn't sure what the call should be, so he came over, and there was a direct phone from the field to my spot in the press box, and the referee called up, and Art McNally, who was the director of NFL officiating, had run down from where he was because he knew there was a phone where I was, and the referee said, let me talk to McNally.
Joe, did you answer the phone?
Oh, you always did. Well, the phone rang. That was my responsibility.
So the Immaculate Reception happens. Franco scores in the aftermath. The referee is calling the press box, and you answer the phone.
Talk to the NFL director of officiating.
That's
Art
great.
McNally. So Art was right next to me by that time. I said, here, Swearingen wants to talk to you.
Oh, can you share what that conversation?
Yeah, it was very brief.
Okay.
McNally said to Swearingen, what did you see? And whatever Swearingen told him, he says, well, call it. That's it. It was like a 15, 20-second conversation. So Swearingen went right back on the field and raised his arm to signify touchdown. And that was it. And to this day, it's very controversial. The Raiders have never conceded that it was a legal play. But as you mentioned earlier, it's the greatest play in the history of pro football. There are a lot of people who think that the Steelers went to the Super Bowl that year, but we didn't. Next week, we lost to the undefeated Miami Dolphins 21-17. They went on to win their second straight Super Bowl.
But what was it like? What did the Immaculate Reception do? And again, you're looking at this from the PR perspective, the way the rest of the world views the Pittsburgh Steelers. What did the Immaculate Reception do for the Steelers franchise?
Well, it became an international story. I didn't have to do anything because it had been on live television and TV stations around the country, and then some foreign station just replayed it, and it became even more popular, to the point where you mentioned earlier the greatest play in NFL history.
Now, you said you were close to Joe Green.
Yes.
One of, if not the most iconic commercials in TV history was, of course, the Coca-Cola commercial with
right.
the kid and Joe Green. Were you there? Did you help set that up?
No.
What was your did you talk about it with Joe either before or after and the significance of that commercial?
No, I didn't have anything to do with the arrangements and the details on that. That went through Joe's attorney, who was a very good friend of mine, but I wasn't aware of it until it was released. And of course, it was voted the greatest sports commercial of all time. They brought it back a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw it
mm-hmm.
or not. And Joe had to drink something like 18 bottles of Coke to get that finished.
But, did Joe ever tell any stories about what that commercial and the impact of that commercial meant for him?
Sure. It raised his profile nationally. Even though he was a great football player,
mm-hmm.
This crossed all kinds of lines, you know, economic and lines. And so Joe became much more popular, and it led to other opportunities for him with personal appearances and endorsements.
How about Terry Bradshaw, Joe? You mentioned you had good relationships with Franco and Mean Joe. What was your relationship like with Terry? And as the 70s grew and he became a bigger and bigger star, and now he's still a celebrity 50 years later, what do you make of Terry's rise?
As a player, he was probably the best athlete I ever saw. He was phenomenal talent, great, great arm, as strong an arm as I've ever seen. And tough, could take a hit and wouldn't hesitate to run and put his head down for the extra yard or two. He was just great, and he was very good to work with. He was very cooperative. I never had a problem with him. If I wanted him to do an interview, he was always receptive and available, and we just got it done. And then a little bit after he retired, it was somewhat of a strained relationship. He really had an inferiority complex when it came to the Steeler fans. And I don't know if you remember, we honored him on a Monday night football game. I'm not sure what year that was. And we brought his two daughters in and his parents. And seeing him that afternoon, he said, "They're going to boo me." And I said, "Terry, they're not going to boo you. They love you." And the applause that night when he was introduced on the field was just memorable. I mean, it exploded. And it just proved how much the fans appreciated him as a football player and how much they loved him. And now his post-playing career has been incredible with his role on Fox Sports, the pre- and half-game and post-game shows, and also his acting career and entertainment career. He still does some touring and entertains. So, he's had a phenomenal career, a phenomenal life, and he's a good person.
Personally, kept in touch with Terry over the years. I know some of the strange thing with Pittsburgh might still be there, but if you see him, or will you reach out to him and call him, or he'll call you? Are you in contact with him?
If I need something from him, like an autographed jersey or an autographed helmet or football, he's always cooperative. I'll call him, say, "I'm sending you this. Please sign it and return it." And he's always done that. There was he was on one of the talk shows in Pittsburgh, and I don't know how my name came up, but he said something to the effect that Joe Gordon hates me.
Oh, no.
So I sent him a note, and I said, "Dear Terry, I do not hate you." And then he made a retraction on radio later with that. So he's a good dude. He's a little different, but I am just so pleased with the success he's had, not only in broadcasting, but in acting and in his musical career.
Joe, what was your relationship like with Chuck Noll? You said earlier that you knew Chuck Noll was going to win. What made you so confident? Why was he such a good coach?
Well, he was a good coach because he was so knowledgeable and a great judge of talent. When you look at the drafts, Chuck and our personnel department with Art Rooney Jr. and Dick Haley, they did look at a phenomenal job of the draft choices. How about four guys going into the Hall of Fame for one draft in 1974? Swan, Stallworth, Lambert, and Webster. That's unprecedented. It'll never happen again. But part of the credit for that has to go to Chuck Noll. But he was a great judge of talent, and a very fundamentally very strong coach, and that transferred over to the players, both on offense and defense. He was a great teacher.
What was it like? What was your personal relationship like? Did you deal with him on a day-to-day basis?
Well, mostly, sure. Well, I'd see him every day because our offices were close to each other. But the best thing I can say about Chuck is he was always available for interviews. And in 23 years, he only turned me down once. And that was Howard Cosell wanted to do an interview with him, and he said, "I'll pass." But in 23 years...
Wait a minute. Why is he turning down Howard Cosell? Did something happen?
Well, I don't think he... It was... We were playing the Oilers on a Monday night game and had a light workout in the Astrodome, and Cosell was there, and he came over, and he said, "I'd like to talk to Chuck after practice." And Chuck probably really was not an admirer of Cosell's because of Cosell's personality and on-air personality and how bombastic he was. So that was it. But I had a good relationship with Cosell.
I was going to ask you that because in your unique position, what was Howard Cosell like? What was your relationship like with him?
Very good. He would often call me to get an update on an injured player or something. And then one year we were closing out the season in San Diego on a Sunday night, which the last Monday night game of the year at that time would be played on Sunday night. So he was staying at the same hotel as I because I was advancing the game. And we had lunch, I think it was three times that week, and we hung out together. He used to do his radio shows right off the top of his head, no notes or anything. He says, "Come on, I'll put you on the radio." So he interviewed me on national radio. But he was a good guy and had a real good relationship with him. In fact, another Costell story that's very interesting. In 1982, we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Steelers. Steelers were founded in 1933, so in 82, that would have been the 50th season. And we were having a great celebration at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center that had just been opened recently, about a month or two before then. But there was a football strike, if you remember. And We were naming the all-time Steeler team, and we were anxious to see if these players were going to show up, which they did. And Cosell, at that time, was doing Major League Baseball playoff games, and he was scheduled to do a game in Atlanta. And Rune Arledge, who was the head of ABC Sports, heard that Cosell wasn't going to be at the game. So he called Cosell. Cosell said, "I made a promise to the Rooneys. I have to keep it." So we we sent a private jet to Atlanta to bring him to Pittsburgh. It was a Saturday night, the banquet was. We got him back, so he only missed one baseball game.
And was Howard pretty much the same in person as he was on TV, or was there a difference, really?
No, he was not as high-key in person. Sometimes he would be, but if you went to production meetings with him, with Frank Gifford and Don Meredith and that crew, he would take over the meetings, and the other announcers would be frustrated. In fact, Gifford, who I became pretty close with, he would, when the meeting was over, he'd walk over, the production meeting was over, he'd walk over to me and say, what's your room number? I'll give you a call.
Because he didn't get a word in edgewise
exactly,
with Howard in the meeting.
He would call me, and we'd talk for about 15, 20 minutes, and I'd give him the Steeler version of what was going on. But those were just great times.
Oh, those are great. Now, Joe worked for the Steelers 29 years. We literally could go for hours on this, but I want to fast forward to Bill Cowher because you got to do the entire Chuck Knoll era. He passes the baton to Bill Cowher. You worked with Bill for a number of years as well. What was your relationship like with Coach Cowher?
It was good. I was not as close to Bill as I was with Chuck because the time element. But Bill was very, very well organized. I was impressed with that from the very beginning. He knew what he wanted to do, and he knew how to get it done. And the part that always impressed me about, well, he was different from Chuck from a personality standpoint, like on the field. You know, how Bill would carry on. He'd be yelling and screaming at the officials. At one time, he when he put the play card in the official's pocket at halftime, walking off the field. But Bill, like I said, was really well organized and did a great job with the Steelers. And had a good personal relationship with him. But like I said, I wasn't as close. And there was a minor change in the media. Bill was not as, we weren't as open with Bill as we had been with Chuck. But at the same time, we still had a very open dressing room. And he was always available for interviews. And this day, when I ever see him, we have good conversation.
Well, the last thing I want to mention is that change in the media, Joe. I'm 48. I got involved in the media in 1992. After and then in college, you were involved in 1969. You saw the whole thing change from really having to get out and promote everything, then ESPN, then national broadcast and everything, 80s, 90s, and the explosion of the NFL. What is your takeaway from the way the media coverage and the NFL's popularity changed over time?
Well, the most significant changes are obvious. Cable TV, which is ESPN, talk radio, and then social media. None of those things existed for the great, maybe my entire career. So it's been much, much tougher on PR people because the players and to a degree the coaches are more independent and you don't have the access that you had during my career. So it's changed and it would be very difficult for me to come back now and try to operate the way I did during the bulk of my 29 years with the Steelers. And I think it's unfortunate. And I think from a fan standpoint, they don't get as much basic information as they did back in those days. They get more personalities and, you know, some of the players, their priorities are different. And it's just a different world. And like I say, I couldn't possibly have functioned in today's NFL as I did back in the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s.
Wow, Joe, those are tremendous, tremendous stories. I never got to meet you, but I've heard great things about you from some old-time Steelers reporters. I cannot thank you enough for sharing all of those personal stories. Congratulations on the honor with the Hall of Fame, and really just spectacular stuff hearing all of these great memories. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for calling me, Corey. Enjoyed the conversation. Stay well and enjoy the holiday.
Very good. Thank you so much, sir.
Yep.